we got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that. All right? Let's go. Break it. Break it. Let it cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN.
What's happening? Welcome in Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN with Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Happy to have you with us. Lovely Thursday afternoon. Feels like a Friday because there's football tonight. Well, actually, that wouldn't make any sense because they don't play NFL football. I don't know. It feels like a Friday, and I'm going to stick to it because the Chiefs open up the NFL season. They open up their season at 7:30 in Foxborough against the Pats, and they're going to need a lot of help in pulling off this upset in what you know is going to be a very, very chaotic environment. So we're only going until 5:45 tonight. Special edition season premiere of High School Sports Weekly at 5:45 at Set 'Em Up Jacks. David Lawrence and myself will be joined by Bob Lisher and the Free State football team. That goes to 6:45. Immediately following the conclusion of that, we've got high school football once again. LHS playing on a Thursday night. That's why it feels like Friday, because the second straight Thursday in a row, we've got high school football. LHS looking to improve to 2-0. Taking on Shawnee Mission North. That game at 7 o'clock. Hank Booth, Matt Llewellyn on the call right here on KLWN. Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal-World joins us coming up in 25 minutes. We've got our NFL predictions to get to over the next hour or so. And, of course, some more KU football talk. John Costco of Pro Football Focus later on in the 4 o'clock hour. The big question is, how the heck are the Chiefs going to pull off this win tonight? Right? How are they going to go to New England and get a win against Tom Brady? He just never loses. He never loses in Foxborough. He never loses against the AFC in the regular season. It just seems like I said yesterday, the Lambs being led to the slaughter. How are they going to win? I think Vegas, last I checked, had them as 9-point dogs. And they opened at, like, what, 6?
Mm-hmm. About 6.5.
So people are seeing the 6, and they're throwing more money on the Patriots, which I totally understand, because it's really, really hard to come up with a scenario in which the Chiefs go to Foxborough and come out of it victorious. It's tough to sweat it because it is the Patriots, and if there was ever a game where you're not going to get your hopes up for, this would be the scenario, wouldn't it? If there, I mean, outside of an AFC Championship game in New England, is this not the worst scenario for a Chiefs fan to go into as far as hoping your team is going to win? Okay, you're playing against Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots. You're playing on their turf. You're playing in the season opener. You're playing on a national stage. And they just came off a Super Bowl victory. An epic Super Bowl victory, mind you. It's and Rob Gronkowski's healthy again. So the biggest mismatch nightmare that the NFL's seen in the past decade is supposedly 100% healthy for the first time in, like, however many years. Anything else? Am I missing anything? Am I missing any other built-in advantages that the Patriots have going into this game?
Roger Goodell's going to be there, so that'll get the fans a little more fired up.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's going to have much of an effect. Yet, you see this, the thing that Barstool Sports is doing? Barstool Sports has these turquoise shirts, and it's just Roger Goodell's face with a clown nose on it. And Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator, when the Patriots return from the Super Bowl and they're getting off the plane, and the media's there, Matt Patricia gets off the plane wearing one of these shirts with a Goodell clown face.
Which already gets funnier when you know what Matt Patricia looks like.
Right. He looks...
He doesn't look like a defensive coordinator.
What does he look like?
He just looks like your normal dude who's like going to a bar to slam a bunch of chicken wings and a beer.
No, you know what he looks like? He looks like a regional manager of like a liquor distribution company. Like, he looks like the kind of guy who's carrying around the clipboard. Just like he would in his regular job as the defensive coordinator, clipboard, pencil in the ear, and he's checking to see how many kegs you ordered. You know, like, he's like, oh, wait, I have you guys down for 2 kegs of Modelo and 6 of Bud Light. Is that about right? All right, guys. All right, boys, load them up. And he's, you know, ripping open the door of the semi truck. Like, that's what Matt Patricia looks like. There's a lot of things that Matt Patricia looks like. Maybe we can come up with more by the time this show ends. But he wore that shirt getting off the plane. Roger Goodell was reportedly not happy about it, which made it funnier. And so Barstool Sports, which is a Boston-based company, they decided, you know what? Roger Goodell's going to be at this game because he goes to every NFL season opener. It's his first time being at a Patriots game officially since the whole Deflategate stuff happened. So Barstool Sports paid like $150,000, made 70,000 of these towels, and they're an obnoxious turquoise color. So it's not like they're going to blend in with all of the other Patriots garb in the stands tonight. And they're handing them out to fans for free. It is going to be impossible for NBC and that television coverage to just completely ignore it. I wonder if they're going to zoom in on it. So you're right. Like, the fans are going to be spewing vitriol at Roger Goodell. That's going to be a major theme of the game tonight. I don't know if it's going to help the Pats on the field, but it's going to make for an entertaining experience nonetheless. The question still remains, Derek. We haven't even gotten close to answering it. How do the Chiefs win this game tonight? Is there a formula? I mean, the Chiefs conceivably should be one of the best teams in the league at getting to the quarterback. Last year, they weren't. Three prior years to that, they were. Justin Houston injuries were a concern. Dee Ford at the beginning of the season was one of the best sack artists in the NFL. Then Justin Houston came back and everything kind of fell apart. Then all of a sudden, nobody could get to the quarterback. But on paper, this team should improve in that area. We can talk about how much they failed at it last year, but it should be an area where they are markedly improved from a season ago. And that's going to be huge tonight because you have to be able to get to this. It's a very, very tough way of going about it. But you have to be able to apply pressure to Tom Brady without sending the house. Well, because if you send the house, if you blitz everybody, he's going to pick you apart all night.
The issue is you have to do it quick, too.
Yeah.
Because he gets rid of the ball so fast that you're not going to have time to get a coverage sack. Like, you have to get in there within 2 to 3 seconds. And a lot of that's got to come up the middle.
And all we're really doing is finding creative ways to say that Tom Brady's really good.
Yeah.
I go, yeah, Tom Brady happens to be really good at getting the ball out quickly. And if you blitz him, then he's going to pick you apart because he's a good, accurate thrower of the football, in case you hadn't seen. So I would imagine that Bill Belichick is going to plan for the idea that the Chiefs are going to have some success getting to Tom Brady. And how do you do that? I think you run the ball. I think the Patriots always seem to zig when you think they're going to zag. Like, oh, Terrence Mitchell, Steven Nelson's out. So it's Terrence Mitchell and Philip Gaines at that second cornerback spot. They're going to throw the ball and pick on them all day. Probably will. Like, that's probably going to be a factor, but I also think they're going to run the ball and dare the Chiefs to kind of beat them up front. Okay, you think you're going to sack us all night? Well, we'll just run it and we'll see what you do then. Okay, we want to pass the ball? Empty backfields. Now we got 5 receivers out there. Now you can't send the house because then you know what Tom Brady's going to do to you. There is going to be a ton of pressure on this Chiefs defense, particularly that front 7, to find ways to get to the quarterback without having to kind of hinder the rest of your defense.
And I think specifically it's up the middle. It's those guys in the middle, either the defensive tackle, Benny Logan, because he's going to be key in stopping that run, or it's going to be Derek Johnson, Ramiq Wilson, the middle linebackers stopping that run. They have to play in pass coverage if they're in zone or whatever. And then it's those guys, Chris Jones and Alan Bailey or Tano Passanio, whoever comes in as those D linemen up the middle. They have to be the ones to initiate the pressure. They have to be the ones to stop the run. You can convince yourself that, hey, you know what, Tom Brady's going to get his, and they're going to have a lot of successful passing plays. But at the very least, Brandon Cooks, your best receiver, we have Marcus Peters. Rob Gronkowski, yeah, he's going to have a big day, but at least we got Eric Berry to try and limit him a little bit. So you can convince yourself that they have some good matchups there. But those D linemen, those 3 guys in the middle, they have to be the ones to step up for the Chiefs.
He's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. You know the Pats are going to try and take away what Kansas City does best. And judging off last year, that's getting the ball to Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. And I don't know if they'll be able to take both of them completely out of the game, but I wouldn't expect both of them to have big nights tonight. Like, one of those guys is going to see the production dip. And the Pats win over Kansas City 2 years ago. In the playoffs, they double-teamed Kelce the whole game, and he finished with 6 catches for 23 yards. Wouldn't shock me to see that happen again. And we've talked all offseason, especially since the dismissal of Jeremy Maclin, about Hill taking the next step from being a breakout player in the league to becoming a bona fide star. And he's going to need to be one tonight. Like, if Tyreek Hill is taken out of this game, I am convinced the Chiefs have no shot. Tyreek Hill is the biggest mismatch that you have on any given week. And in an environment like tonight, against opponent like the Patriots, they're going to have to find ways to get him the ball in an effective manner. Because if not, then there are going to be some very vocal and justified concerns about this offense. Because if you go out and Kelce gets blanked and Tyreek Hill gets blanked, that means Alex Smith's probably not thrown for very many yards. And if we're talking tomorrow about how Alex Smith had 178 yards passing, two interceptions, Kelce and Hill were both held under 50 yards receiving, the sirens are going to start going off around Chiefs Kingdom. People are going to be saying, what's this offense going to be good at this year? And that's why I think Tyreek Hill has to have a big game tonight. He absolutely has to.
What?
Even if the Chiefs lose. If he has a productive game, you say, well, that was going to be a tough win to get no matter what, but at least we know we've got some weapons here that are going to be useful the rest of the year.
Look at the roster, too. A running back, you have a rookie making his first start of his NFL career. You're in Foxborough. Behind that, you have Charcandrick West, and now you just cut C.J. Spiller. So you have, what, two running backs on the roster for this? So not only is it not going to be a heavy load for the running backs, knowing that there's just two and one of them's a rookie, but on top of that, you figure the Patriots are going to try to take Kelce out of the game. You figure the Patriots are going to load the box, try to stop the run, try to prevent those easy short passes that Alex Smith loves. And that is huge. Tyreek Hill has to be able to have a big game. Even if it's a couple deep balls, a couple of them aren't complete, even if one he blows by the defender, but then Alex Smith misses him. As long as you complete one, they get a touchdown off it, they get a big gain, they have to have that from Tyreek Hill in this game, because otherwise the Patriots are just going to completely load up the box.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that burden is going to fall on Alex Smith. You've got a weapon in Tyreek Hill whose ceiling is capped if the guy with the football isn't willing to throw it downfield. And as for Kareem Hunt, if you're Belichick, why wouldn't you dare the Chiefs to beat you with him? Oh, a rookie running back making his NFL debut on a national stage against the defending champs. Like, yeah, let's make that guy beat us. Let's dare Kareem Hunt to go out and beat us. But from the Chiefs' perspective, that has to be a focus tonight. You know that they're going to dare you to beat them with your rookie running back. If he can go out and have a semblance of a good game, 100 yards and a touchdown, you're going to feel pretty good about it. I have no idea what to think about Hunt, because Kansas City's rushing attack took a significant dip last year with no Jamal Charles and Alex Smith rushing less. Then the line was so-so, so they're going to need to be effective on the ground if they want to have another good season. This isn't just about getting one win against the Patriots. It's about having a good season. Like, we're not going to learn everything about this team based off this game, but it is going to be as big of a test as they're going to face all year long. It happens to come in week number one. I just think the big plays are going to be big, man. The big plays are going to be very instrumental, I should say, in trying to get a win. The best way to go about it, putting the ball in Tyreek Hill's hands in open field. And if the Chiefs win tonight, I think we'll look back on it tomorrow and say, man, that punt return for a touchdown by Hill may have been the kickstarter in that game. So Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt, those are the two guys who I think need to have big games if the Chiefs want any chance of getting out of Foxborough with a victory. It's 3:18 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We'll talk to Benton Smith coming up about 12 minutes from right now talking KU football. But up next, let's give our NFL predictions, starting with the NFC.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
.332 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. KU looking to improve to 2-0 as they welcome the Chippewas of Central Michigan into Memorial Stadium this Saturday. So joining us to talk about the game and KU football is Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal World. Benton, what's going on, man?
How much, Nick? How are you?
I'm good. Appreciate you joining me once again this week. So, Peyton Bender, 4 touchdown passes, the most since Todd Reising. That's been pretty well documented at this point. Were you surprised?
I read that somewhere, I think.
Were you surprised by just how much success he had in KU's first game?
You know, I really wasn't. You kind of got the sense the more that you're around this program, the more that you talk to people, the more that you talk to Peyton Bender, that poise was really one of his biggest attributes. And I mean, he's kind of a cool customer everywhere he goes, on and off the football field. Pretty laid back guy. So seemed like someone who could handle that kind of burden of putting up big numbers and moving the offense up and down the field, and doing the kind of things that, like you just mentioned, we haven't really seen at KU since the Todd Reesing days.
Because of that poise, and I think you're spot on there, like that's one of the things that really stood out to me. He just seemed so calm and collected. Because of that, does that almost make you look at this? Because before the SEMO game, we talked all week about the fact that, well, it's going to be against SEMO, so you're probably going to have to take some of what you see with a grain of salt. That seems to be like something that will be able to kind of carry over regardless of the opponent. Like, you either have that or you don't. It makes me feel at least a little bit more optimistic that he's going to be able to continue at least some productive play throughout the season.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that translates to whoever you're playing, and obviously that he's going to see more pressure as the season goes on, and the opponents get more difficult and difficult by the week, seemingly going forward here for a little bit. So we'll see him challenged in ways that he definitely wasn't against SEMO, probably as soon as this weekend. But I think it's great. It's a great sign for KU that Bender got off to such a good start to his season, and you know, has no reason to really lack in the confidence department. We should continue to see him, you know, feel pretty comfortable in whatever situation he's facing. He really didn't make too many bad throws this week. The one obvious one was that second quarter interception where he just threw the ball completely behind Jeremiah Booker on that first interception. And I think Doug Meacham referred to it as horrendous.
Well, you know, what's funny is that after the game, David Beatty kind of joked about the fact that if you want to have production rushing the ball, you have to have running plays called by the coordinator. So maybe be a lighthearted jab there at offensive coordinator Doug Meacham. But how much of an emphasis do you expect that to be moving forward, knowing that you're probably not going to face a defense where you're going to have an opportunity to run the ball like you did against SEMO?
Yeah, I think we will see KU incorporate its running game a little bit more against teams that aren't so, you know, what the double eagle that David Beatty referenced a number of times this past week, that defense that just has, you know, seven guys right at the point of attack. And Doug Meacham, I think he's probably said it best today. You know, he would have been disappointed in his rushing game if he had kept calling running plays against a defense that had nine players in the box. He said that would have disappointed him more than the low output that they had this week.
Are you optimistic at all that they will be able to start to find production on the running and in the rushing attack?
I think it'll come. I have my doubts about it ever becoming prolific, and I just don't think that this offense is based upon running the ball. It's based upon spreading the ball with quick passes and getting the ball out to a number of different targets and kind of keeping the defense guessing in that way. And obviously, you've got to mix in some rushing plays at some point, but I just don't think that at this stage that it's really a requirement of this offense. That might run into a defense that makes it one, and we'll see how they adjust to that. But that might be a few weeks down the road.
Talking to Benton Smith here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Last Thursday, we talked a little bit about Daylon Charlotte not being listed as a starter in that first depth chart, and we didn't see much of him on Saturday. But I think what was on full display was just the depth that KU has at that wide receiver position. So after watching them for a game and seeing the success that the pass catchers had, was that maybe a little bit of justification as to why Daylon Charlotte it seems to be maybe behind the eight ball a little bit in terms of those wide receivers?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a pretty big part of it. Just that KU really does trust those guys that they have that played most of the reps in the season opener. You know, obviously they have the utmost trust in Steven Sims, and you can see that they kind of feel close to the same way about guys like Jeremiah Booker and Ben Johnson and I think Chase Harrell is close to that level too. They might rip him a little bit for a drop that he had that could have been a big play and maybe not making a better play on that interception in the fourth quarter if he had gotten up and maybe knocked that ball away. Then maybe Peyton Bender's numbers are even better. But I do think that they really like the two deep at the receiver, at all the receiver spots. And that's kind of part of it. I mean, Doug Meacham talked about during August, for whatever reason, they didn't really get into specifics, but Daylon Charlotte sounds like missed some time or was kind of held back due to some sort of injury and what it was, whether it was a leg, an ankle, a knee, something, who knows, but it sounds like he's working his way back toward full health, but now he's kind of behind everybody else. So he's going to have to make up some ground and kind of inspire the coaches to put him on that first string.
Do you still expect to see him be a big part of this offense moving forward?
I do. I just don't know when it's going to come. Like, I mean, I feel like we saw in the spring, and I know it was just like the spring game, you shouldn't take too much away from it, but I mean, he looked like one of the best receivers in that game. He looked like a guy that would be starting this fall, and he has big play ability. He's a guy that you can throw a deep ball to, and he's strong and he's athletic, and he can go up and make those type of plays that we saw Jeremiah Booker make, that we saw Chase Harrell make in the opener. So I think that he's confident too, and I just think he'll keep working and find a way to get onto the field. I don't know how soon it's going to come because I can't. It's hard to get a sense at this point about how far behind he is. But I think this year, barring another injury or something, he'll find a way to make an impact.
On the defensive side of the ball, only 16 points surrendered. Take that however you may, but if you look at the yards that Simo was able to accrue, most of them came on two or three really big plays. Other than that, I thought the defense did an outstanding job. What was your overall takeaway on that side of the ball?
Yeah, pretty impressed by the defense as a whole, and that, I think that it starts up front with that defensive line, and we saw KU do some pretty cool things up front, being able to use Daniel Wise as a defensive end, and then basically, interior, you've got E.C. Halami, and you've got J.J. Holmes, and those two guys are pretty massive, and then you have the Big 12's preseason defensive player of the year on the other end, so I mean, I think that's a pretty strong front, and Clint Bowen was pretty complimentary of that foursome and their ability to just kind of, negate anything at the point of attack. And then, of course, that allowed Joe Dineen to have a massive day, just tackle after tackle after tackle. So, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, maybe one or two pretty big chunk plays from SEMO, but other than that, really, really nothing going. And I think what that Tyler Patrick fumble on a punt return kind of set Simo up for another of their scores, I think. So I thought the defense played really well.
And Joe Dineen, a guy you mentioned, Big 12 Player of the Week, had an outstanding game. Is that the kind of performance that you think Kansas fans should be expecting from Dineen on a weekly basis?
I think it'll vary week to week, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this guy leads the team in tackles by the end of the season, but I'm sure, depending on what kind of offense they're facing and how people start trying to game plan to either avoid the D-line or avoid the linebackers and what Dineen can do. I think the tough thing for KU opponents with this veteran defense they have three veterans that you really trust in, right? And Dineen and Dorrance Armstrong and Daniel Wise. Mm-hmm. So I think week after week, we're going to see one of those guys, if not two or all three of them, just have really big days. Because, I mean, you just can't negate guys like that that are so so consistent and playmakers and have that athleticism that the defense needs.
And perhaps I should have seen this coming, but statistically, Dorrance Armstrong didn't jump off the box score at you. But watching the impact that he has on every single snap, offenses are completely focusing on trying to negate his ability to get after the quarterback and create havoc in the backfield. It seems as though it's going to open up opportunities for others. So do you view this as a season for Dorrance Armstrong where statistically he may not be able to stay on par with what he did a season ago, but the impact is still going to be there, if not even greater?
Yeah, that's a great point about the impact that he makes, even when those tackles for loss and sacks and just total tackles may not show up quite as consistently as last year. I'd be pretty surprised if he doesn't have similar production to what he did in his sophomore year, just because if you remember last year, he was kind of had to ease into the season because he was coming off a pretty significant knee injury in the in August, and he just got off to a slow start. It was really almost a month into the season before he got rolling. So I think when you factor in that, I think that his statistical output by the end of the year will probably be pretty similar, but he will have some more hurdles to clear with opposing offenses really just game planning to avoid him. I mean, I don't know how many times Simo dialed up a rushing play, and I feel like 9 times out of 10 it was going the opposite direction of Dorrance Armstrong.
How would you characterize the importance of this game on Saturday against CMU?
Oh, this is a huge one for Kansas because, I mean, I think this team actually is capable of winning 4 games this season, but you might have to throw that out the window if they don't handle this game against Central Michigan. I think in the offseason, a lot of people were kind of viewed this game as either a toss-up game or, you know, a game that maybe KU should win, but maybe they'll be close, but I don't know. That first week in Central Michigan struggles against Rhode Island, I'm starting to feel like Kansas just has enough talent that this game shouldn't be too big of an issue. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win by 28 points or anything, but at this juncture, I'd be pretty shocked if Central Michigan came in here and won.
Do you think that the product that we're going to see, you talked about earlier, not having to kind of show all your cards if you don't need to, which KU didn't need to win against SEMO. With that being said, do you think the product on the field, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, is going to look noticeably different than what it did last Saturday?
I think in general the offense will look pretty similar in that you'll see Bender trying to disperse the ball to a number of different guys, and the passing is going to outweigh the running. But I think maybe the offense will be a little less vanilla this week. I mean, KU was able to keep it pretty simple and still be effective with the things they did against SEMO in week one. I think Central Michigan's going to have a lot better athletes, maybe out in the secondary and at the linebacker level, than KU faced last week. So that's going to be something that KU will have to adjust to, and I think you do that by maybe kind of opening up your playbook a little bit more.
He's Benton Smith. Check out his work in the LJ world and at KUSports.com. Appreciate the time once again, man.
No problem. Thanks, Nick.
All righty. That's Benton Smith. I'm Nick Schwert. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We will continue our NFL picks. We've got a Hog Wild giveaway to do coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. It's 3:45 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
3:25, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Got our NFL predictions to do today because the NFL season begins tonight. We'll have the AFC predictions and our playoff picks coming up later on in the show. But right now, let's start with the NFC. We'll go through the divisions, pick our winners, and then we'll see what other superlatives we want to hand out. Let's start with the NFC North. It's pretty easy for me on this one. The Green Bay Packers got off to a horrendous start last year. Aaron Rodgers went in front of the presser and said, you know, I think we're going to have to run the table, and that's exactly what they did the rest of the way. If they can just avoid a really bad start, the Packers could conceivably be the best team in the NFL this year. So I'm going Green Bay all the way.
Probably an easy pick.
NFC East. Now, this one's a little tricky simply because we don't know exactly what the Cowboys are going to look like if they don't have Ezekiel Elliott for a month and a half. There's a Redskins offense that continues to kind of be on the precipice of being one of the better units in the league. Now they've got Terrell Pryor. I really like that Redskins offense, but I still don't think it's enough. Same thing with the Giants and Brandon Marshall, bringing them into that passing attack. I don't trust Eli Manning. I really like Carson Wentz. They've got Alshon Jeffrey now in Philadelphia. That could be an offense that could be on the cusp of taking that next step, but I'm going to go with what I know here. The Cowboys were one of the best teams in the NFL. It's hard to go against them, too.
I don't think any team's going 13-3, though, in that division again this year.
No, I don't either. I think it's going to be the tightest race the tightest divisional race in football, but I'm going to take that offensive line and Ezekiel Elliott. I do expect a little regression from Dak Prescott. He's just not going to be able to do that every year, but I still think they're good enough to win the division. NFC South. This is one of those divisions where every single year is a different team who wins it. And this has been going on for a decade. Last year it was the Falcons. The year before it was the Panthers. The Saints did it for a while.
Only been the repeat champion one time ever.
In the history.
Yes, Panthers did it back-to-back years. Besides that.
And I think that trend continues this year. I always stay away from teams who lose in the Super Bowl. They always seem to have bad follow-up seasons. So no Falcons. I still don't trust the Panthers and Cam Newton. The Saints, I'm not really sure on that one. I'm going the Buccaneers, man. They add DeSean Jackson. They've got one of the best aerial attacks in the NFL. Jameis Winston just needs to cut back on the turnovers. But other than that, like, that's a scary, scary offense if he can kind of take that next step, which I think a lot of people expect him to. So I'm going Buccaneers in the South. And in the NFC West, this one's probably the easiest one with the Seattle Seahawks. I don't really think there's any legitimate contenders, even though I do like the Cardinals to take a step forward. They were a sexy pick to win that division last year.
And you loved the 49ers?
Fell flat on their face. Absolutely not. 49ers going to be one of the worst teams in football. So I got the Packers, the Cowboys, the Bucks, and the Seahawks, my wild card picks. I'm going to go Redskins. I'm going to go Arizona Cardinals. So those are my picks for the NFC.
I think Giants or Redskins. I think you got one spot out of that for sure. Cardinals are going to be weird. We talked about Green Bay. You talked about how they could be possibly best team in the NFL. They don't give out an NFC MVP.
Right.
But if I were to peg this as Aaron Rodgers versus the field for NFC MVP, who are you taking?
So who are the other candidates? Russell Wilson.
Any quarterback in the NFC South?
Ezekiel Elliott, if he played a full season, would probably be right up there. Yeah, I mean, Jameis Winston, Drew Brees, Cam Newton, Matt Ryan. I mean, you got the reigning NFL MVP, so it'd be remiss if I didn't at least mention him. But I would take Aaron Rodgers because he is the most talented quarterback in the NFL. I don't know exactly how much more he can do as far as like raising his game to another level. It's just consistency, right? Beginning of last season was terrible. He looked like the greatest quarterback in the history of planet Earth second half of last season. So I actually would take Aaron Rodgers.
All right, I got a fun one for you. Who's going to have more wins, that 49ers team that you just bashed, or every other team in the NFC that has a mascot name that does not end with an S?
How many teams are there?
I'm not telling you.
Okay, I can go through this. Packers, Lions.
No, you just got to guess.
No, I'm going. I have to figure out which teams don't end in an S. Packers, Lions, Vikings, Bears, Cowboys, Giants, Redskins, and Eagles. Buccaneers, Saints, Panthers, Falcons, Seahawks, Cardinals, 49ers.
Oh, he's on to me.
And the Rams. There are no teams that don't end in an S.
Trick question.
So I'm going to go with the 49ers. You thought I just wasn't going to figure it out?
I thought you were just going to toss out a number out
No,
there.
I'm going to go through the steps. I'm going to think it out. You're not going to trick me like that. Who the hell do you think I am, man? Come on.
All right, let's stay with the Niners. Well, possibly the Niners. Who's going to be the first QB to get benched in the NFC? Mike Glennon in Chicago or Brian Hoyer in San Francisco?
Could I potentially throw out another candidate?
Sure.
I don't think I have one, but I just wanted to know if that was an option.
Yes, you have that option.
On the table. Who's the backup in San Francisco? Blaine Gabbert?
C.J. Beathard.
Okay, well, no. Brian Hoyer's got more job security than he's ever had in his life. Mike Glennon, on the other hand, has the number two overall pick in the draft, Mitch Trubisky, behind him. Easy one. I'm going Mike Glennon in Chicago. All right, those are our NFC predictions. We'll do the AFC later on in this hour and our playoff picks coming up in the 4 o'clock hour.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
3:52, new FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. I'm Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. RCST going till 5:45 tonight. That's when High School Sports Weekly takes over. David Lawrence and myself at Set 'Em Up Jacks. We will be joined by the Free State football team coached by Bob Lisher. After that, we'll send it over to Hank Booth and Matt Llewellyn for the call. LHS trying to improve to 2-0 as they take on Shawnee Mission North. Kickoff at 7 o'clock right here on KLWN. Right now, let's get to our AFC predictions. We already gave you our picks for the NFC. We're going to go through each division, give our picks to win, and then Derek's going to hit us with some superlatives. First up, with the AFC North. This is always going to come down to the Steelers and the Bengals until further notice. And the Steelers,
no love for the Ravens?
No love for the Ravens. They just don't have any playmakers on offense at all. The Steelers have maybe more than anybody else in the NFL, so that's why I'm going to go with them. Pretty easy for me. The Bengals took a step back last year. Even when they were winning that division, it didn't make any sense because they had Andy Dalton at quarterback. Now that they're not winning it, it makes perfect sense, so I don't even hesitate when I point to Pittsburgh for the AFC North champions. AFC East, Patriots. Do I need to elaborate
yes.
at all?
I'm very concerned with this
okay,
pick.
The Jets aren't good. The Dolphins aren't good. Who's the other team in
I'm
that
division?
I'm
so confused how the Dolphins
Bills,
made the playoffs
not
last
good.
Year.
I am too. Well, they got Cuddy. They got Cuddy at quarterback, so I don't know what's going to happen there. But, yeah, I'm going Patriots in the AFC East. Probably not a ton of controversy there. AFC South. I picked them last year. They didn't get the job done. I was a year early to the party, but I'm not going to waver on my stance about this team. This is going to be the breakout team of the NFL this year, the Tennessee Titans, led by Marcus Mariota. I was dead wrong about him coming out of college. I did not think he was going to translate to the NFL. Now I think like 5 years from now, he's going to be the face of the league.
And it's funny because both quarterbacks from that class, that the debate was over, him and Winston, you have both of them making the playoffs. And I think that's become a little bit of a trendy pick for an upset, surprising team.
Well, also look at the division they play in, right? The Colts just cannot get right with Andrew Luck. The Texans still don't have a quarterback. We'll see what Deshaun Watson brings to the table when he eventually earns that starting job. So it's just easy because that's the only league where they've got their quarterback solidified and he's healthy and they've got a good cast around him. So I'm going to go Titans in the AFC South. And in the AFC West, do I pick the Chiefs because they won it last year? Do I pick the Raiders because of the fact that they've got the best quarterback in the division? Now they've got Marshawn Lynch behind a great offensive line. That's going to be scary. You got to beat them to earn them. The Chiefs are the defending champs. I have no reason to think that they're not once again going to lord over this division. So I'm going Chiefs again.
I've actually been kind of down on the Raiders this year. Like the defense.
What do you mean down on them this year? They haven't even started playing yet.
I see what you're saying. But when most people have gotten to a point where, this could be a flashy team that could maybe upset the Patriots, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't make the playoffs. Like, if you look at their...
The defense scares me.
Yeah, defense scares me. And then, everybody talks about, what a great offense they had. If you look at some of the numbers, like yards per play, yards per drive, things like that, they weren't in the top 10. They weren't in the top half of the league.
They don't play good against good teams.
No, I don't think that they're as good as some people think.
They're still good enough to make the playoffs. I have them in as one of my wild card picks. The other wild card pick, the Houston Texans. They'll probably end up at 9-7, and that'll be good enough to win the second AFC wildcard spot.
Great defense. They're in a bad division. Get some wins there.
So I have the Bengals missing once again. I have the Broncos missing once again. I have the Ravens missing once again. So very similar to what we saw a year ago, just a few changes.
All right, of those six, which would you say has the biggest chance to flop out?
The Texans, because they're the worst team on there. But I'm least certain about the AFC West than I am any other division. Like, I feel really good about Steelers, Pats, and Titans. AFC West, I'm like 50-50 between the Chiefs and the Raiders. And with the Texans, like, they could very well be one of the worst teams in the NFL. Like, they have a great defense. They have some playmakers on offense. But if you don't have a quarterback, what do you really have? That's kind of where I'm at with the Texans. But I still think they've got enough talent to just manufacture some wins. So I'm going to go Texans there.
Okay, which of the teams that aren't on that list do you think have the best chance of rising up?
Give me the Chargers.
Okay.
Phillip Rivers is one of the most criminally underrated quarterbacks in the NFL over the last decade. He's consistently been amongst the top 10 at that position. He's weathered the storm through some dark days there in San Diego. Keenan Allen, hopefully back 100% healthy. They go out and draft their wide receiver, Mike Williams. Is he out for the season, or is he just going to be out for...
I believe he's out for the year.
So Tyrell Williams came in last year and proved to be a pretty competent guy there. Melvin Gordon had a breakout season at running back. I like that offense. So if I were to go for my dark horse who I don't have making the playoffs, I'm going with the San Diego Chargers.
Oh, you know that's not a team anymore, right?
The Los Angeles Chargers.
It got me too.
It's
going
to take me a while to get used to.
All right, well, that kind of ruined my next one because I was going to ask, what number is going to be higher, Alex Smith interceptions or Chargers victories? But it seems like you're pretty high on the Chargers, so I'm going to scratch that. Alex Smith interceptions or Indianapolis Colts victories? What is the higher number?
Colts wins versus Alex Smith interceptions? That's the question here?
Yes.
Well, the Colts have went 8-8 for two straight years. Alex Smith has not thrown double-digit interceptions since 2010. He had 8 last year, 7 the year before, 6 the year before. So on paper, this would seem to be a very fair bet. So what do I think is more likely? The Colts are better than they've been, or Alex Smith is worse than he's been? The Colts, one of the worst run organizations in the NFL. Alex Smith, Mr. Consistency. I still don't think the Colts are going to be that much worse. I could see Alex Smith throwing 10 interceptions and it still being a good season. So I'm going to say Alex Smith interceptions, even though I think it's going to be neck and neck. That's your AFC predictions. I'm Nick Schwartz with Derek Johnson, Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwartz on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
I can't imagine that the collective NFL fan base is as excited for this game as people in Kansas City and people in Boston are tonight. Because, of course, if Tom Brady's playing on a national platform, like that's going to be a ratings bump. But I've got to imagine when people saw this schedule get released and realized that it was the Chiefs who were going to be taking on the Patriots in the first game of the NFL season, that had to make people a little bit upset because we are biased because it is our team and we want to watch our team play, especially on a national stage. We like it when our team is getting that national attention, but nobody else does. Nobody else wants to see Alex Smith v. Tom Brady tonight. That is not the matchup I would imagine fans were hoping for. Like, if you would have Packers-Patriots, yeah, people would probably be pretty excited about that. I don't know what other matchups you think would really sell for the collective NFL fan base. The Seahawks, the Patriots, they want to see those big names at quarterback. We always talk about how, well, as long as you win, nothing else matters. Well, in this conversation, not quite, because the Chiefs have won as much as almost every single team over the past 5 years, but I don't think that's going to push fans to their television sets to watch this game tonight.
Well, I think the NFL thinks differently. Like, maybe from a fan perspective, I think you're right, but what they've done with the schedule this year, I think shows their willingness to give a bunch of primetime games to Kansas City. They have, what, 5 primetime games this season? You have a Monday nighter against Washington. You play a night game. Obviously, your Thursday night game that every team is allotted. You play either Sunday night or Monday night against the Broncos. There's 4 or 5 night games on there for the Chiefs.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe it's not about we need to put matchups that are sexy and we need to have, you know, the best quarterbacks going up against each other every single week. Maybe it's what the NFL fans respect, what the NFL fans want to see are good teams playing each other. And the fact that whether or not you think the Chiefs are boring and that Alex Smith isn't somebody you're going to get excited to watch, you understand that Kansas City's probably going to be there at the end of the year. If they don't win the division, they're going to be in the conversation and they're probably going to make the playoffs this year. And if that's the case, you know that a game like this is going to have long-term ramifications, even though it's only in week one. And when the Chiefs play the Raiders on, what, Thursday night football, when they play the Broncos on Sunday night football, people understand that those games are going to be big in terms of the standings, in terms of who's going to make it to the playoffs. And if that's the way the NFL is attacking it, then you can't really fault them for it.
All right, check this out. Some breaking news. The Patriots' second receiver out for the year.
Who is it?
Malcolm Mitchell.
I was really high on I was really high on Mitch this year, man. I thought he was going to have a breakout campaign. That's a pretty tough one. It's a tough pill to swallow. So who do they have? Brandon Cooks, Rob Gronkowski, and a bunch of running backs?
A bunch of running backs and a bunch of guys that Tom Brady is going to make famous.
Yep, there's going to be some guy we've never heard of who's going to score a touchdown tonight and probably, you know, tally 100 yards and everyone's going to be picking up in fantasy.
Tight end, and yep. Then he's never going to have another
good
game.
No, he'll never touch the ball again. Like, it'll just be tonight. He'll have a career night. He'll be, like, the number one player in fantasy this week, and he won't rack up a single touch the rest of the season. That's just how it works with New England. We gave you our AFC picks. We gave you our NFC picks, and now it's time to get to the playoffs. In the AFC, our playoff teams, Steelers, Patriots, Titans, Chiefs, wildcard, Texans, Raiders. In the NFC, the Packers, the Cowboys, the Bucks, the Seahawks, wildcards are the Redskins and the Cardinals. So let's start with the AFC. I got the Titans over the Texans. They're my sexy pick. Raiders over the Chiefs in the wild card round. That's just the way the Chiefs season ends, right? We get our hopes up. They win the division. They're the best team.
They've dominated over the years.
They're the best team in the AFC West, and then when it really matters, they lose. That's just how it works. In the divisional round, I've got the Titans over the Steelers and the Patriots over the Raiders AFC championship game that everybody's been waiting for. Patriots, Titans. Calling the upset.
No.
The Tennessee Titans are going to the Super Bowl this year. They are going to represent the AFC.
No.
Why? Why not? Oh, the Patriots are just going to win it every year from now on? Have the Patriots went to every Super Bowl over Tom Brady's career?
No.
Have they won every
the
Super Bowl? Why not? So it has to be only teams that have been there before, right? So it has to be either the Patriots or the Steelers. Are those the only two teams eligible for the Super Bowl from the AFC this year?
I'm just saying, you really think that Marcus Mariota, in his first ever trip to the playoffs,
yes,
is going to run through the Steelers on the road and the Patriots on the road?
Okay, so what teams from the AFC are eligible? Tell me.
What do you mean, that can beat the Patriots?
No, that are just eligible for the Super Bowl in this world that you live in.
I'm just saying, it's not going
to
happen.
So it has to be the Patriots. That's
no,
what you're saying. Okay, then who
no.
do you have?
I would be fine
then
if
who do you
took
have?
The Steelers.
Who do you have?
I'm taking the Patriots because
okay,
I'm not
okay.
stupid. But
you're going to pick them every year?
I mean, you would win more than you'd lose.
Fair. That's fine. But what I'm saying is everybody's going to make NFL predictions. And a lot of people are going to take the Patriots. A lot of people are going to take the Packers from the NFC. And a lot of those people are going to be wrong. So if I'm going to be wrong, I'd rather be wrong and interesting instead of wrong and boring. Okay, I want to check at least one box. So I think the Titans are going to be good. Sue me. They're going to the Super Bowl from the NFC. Wild card round. I got the Bucks over the Redskins. I got the Cardinals over the Cowboys. Next round, Seahawks beat the Bucks. Cardinals beat the Packers. NFC championship game. I got the Seahawks over the Cardinals. And in the Super Bowl,
don't
marquee matchup, Titans, Seahawks. I'm not going to waver at this point, right? I'm not going to back down because it's the Super Bowl now. They just beat the Patriots in Foxborough. The Titans are going to be hosting the Lombardi Trophy at the end of this year.
Right,
Tennessee
so let's get
Titans.
This straight. So the Titans, to win the Super Bowl, had to go through the Texans, which, whatever, not a big deal. Then they had to win at Pittsburgh. They had to win at New England, and then they had to beat the Seahawks in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And you're okay with that.
Why wouldn't I be? What's wrong with that? Okay, fine. You want me to redo it? Okay, I got the Patriots over the Seahawks. I got the Patriots over the Packers, like 99% of NFL fans. Why can't I be different? Why can't I dare to be different?
Don't be different just to jump off a ledge.
But I'm not picking a team I think's going to suck. I'm picking a team that I think's going to be good. We like to think the NFL is so predictable, and several aspects of it are. But it's so funny to me that the Patriots win the Super Bowl, and now we sit here like, oh, yeah, well, they win it every year. No, they don't. They've won it 5 times in the last 15 years. That's a great clip, but they're not winning it every year. They're not even going to the Super Bowl every single year.
Yeah, but it's not one guy, but it's always been like you can group together like 4 teams and pick out of a hat, and it's usually one of those 4. Like,
well, what it used to be was quarterbacks.
Right, and when Peyton Manning was in the league, it was Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or Ben Roethlisberger every year with one exception.
And it was Joe Flacco.
Yes.
Well, guess what? Peyton Manning's gone. Tom Brady's 40. Ben Roethlisberger's 35 and cannot play the entirety of a season. It will not happen. Maybe this is the changing of the guard. Maybe this is it. Eventually it's going to happen. Or are you saying 20 years from now, Tom Brady's going to be 60 playing in his 14th Super
yes,
Bowl?
Yes, he'll be a cyborg.
That's what's going to happen,
yes.
huh?
Yeah, they're going to give him a robot arm.
I mean, I don't know what you want me to do. I'll just pick the Patriots every single year, and then at the end I'll say, well, I'm just playing the odds. That's boring, man. Be different. Titans, Super Bowl champions 2018. So, of course, in that ilk, my NFL MVP this year, Marcus Mariota. Dude, the guy threw for like 26 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. Would it be that shocking if he bumped that number to 36 touchdowns and 6 interceptions? The dude does not throw picks.
They don't throw it enough, though, is the issue. They're a run-first team.
Yeah, but if you don't throw any interceptions and you lead a good team to the playoffs, you'll be in the combo. Don't try to, you know what, leave me alone. Marcus Mariota is the league MVP. Offensive player of the year, don't know how this works, but I got Aaron Rodgers. I wanted to give him some love, too, so don't know how one quarterback would win MVP and the other one would win offensive player of the year. But,
not the craziest thing that's happened in these picks.
Yeah, so it's we'll just go ahead and go with it. Defensive player of the year, Von Miller. Offensive rookie of the year, Christian McCaffrey in Carolina. And defensive rookie of the year, I'm going to go with my guy, Tack McKinley. You may remember him from the NFL draft when he brought the giant picture of his grandmother onto the stage and was just screaming at Deion Sanders.
You just picked him because you liked him. Let's be honest here.
I like his gusto.
Could you name another defensive rookie?
Miles Garrett, the number one overall pick. But
UCLA, who I've known for about 30 years. That's what we're going for, Tom man. Said he was going
to. Made a promise to her and I stuck to it. I made that promise, man.
So
I told her, before she passed away, I was going to live my dream. I was going to go D1. I was going to get out of Richmond. I was going to get out of Oakland. I was going to go to the NFL. I made that promise to her, man. 30 seconds later, she passed away. And this is what I do it for. This is who I do it for, man. Come on, man. Damn. Get to the damn quarterback. Yo, get to the quarterback.
The emotion's good.
I mean, he said it right there. He said it right there. I'm going to get to the quarterback. As a promise. He made a promise to his grandmother. He kept it.
Then
he made a promise to us on national television that he's going to get to the quarterback. I expect him to keep that promise as well.
Would you have felt better if he promised to win Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, I'd feel much better.
At that point, it would have been a lock.
Absolutely. I mean, this guy's batting 1,000. I'm not gonna just ignore that. So he's my defensive rookie of the year. Go place your bets. Win some money. 415 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Give me a call right now. 785-843-1321 is the phone number if you want to win a Hog Wild gift card. 785-843-1321. The fifth caller right now is going to get this gift card from Hog Wild. Their delicious, mouth-watering, slow-smoked pit barbecue will draw you in and the flavor will bring you back. Whether it's the juicy beef brisket, tender pulled pork, the melt-in-your-mouth ribs, the spicy hot links, or one of your other favorites, you know Hog Wild, it's going to be a great barbecue every single time. When it comes to great barbecue and catering for your special events, Hog Wild's got you covered. They do it all, from office parties, reunions, plant lunches, wedding receptions, tailgate parties, retirement parties, and customer appreciation lunches. No matter what the occasion, Hog Wild has an option that will satisfy your needs in Lawrence at 1516 West 23rd Street. 843-1321 is the number. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
440 here, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Derek Johnson here filling in for Nick Schwert. He's getting ready for High School Sports Weekly with David Lawrence. That one will take over at 5:45 right here on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. It is 440, so as I promised, time to talk to John Costco of Pro Football Focus. How's everything going today, John?
Going well. How about yourself, Derek?
Oh, not too bad. Can't complain on my end. Just talking about Joe Dineen on the previous side, he was your highest-rated player on Pro Football Focus on the defensive side of the ball week one for college football. What goes into grading a linebacker? I mean, tackles, missed tackles, what all goes into that?
Yeah, so we look at, you know, what their assignment is on a play, so where they're fitting on a run play. If they're making, like, an unblocked tackle, it has to be, you know, pretty close to the line of scrimmage, or, you know, obviously a tackle for loss for him to get a positive grade on that. And if he's beating it a block to make the tackle, you know, there's a little bit more leeway in terms of how many yards you want to, you know, limit the offense to. But you essentially, on run defense, you have to, you know, make the stop, a tackle, or beating your defender or your offensive lineman to beat a block, forcing a cut, those types of things where you're going above and beyond what your assignment is. If you fill your gap and you don't really beat the offensive lineman to the spot and force a cut, you've done your assignment. You just get a zero graded play type. But when you go above and beyond, obviously making a tackle for a short gain or a loss, that's when what goes more into it on those run defense plays.
How surprised were you that, I mean, this is a guy that missed all of last season with an injury, his first game back, albeit against an FCS school. He comes out and puts up 15 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, and as I mentioned, that ridiculously high grade on Pro Football Focus. How surprised were you that he did this right off the bat?
Extremely impressed, because I didn't expect it from him. Look at 3 years ago when grading Kansas, they had the worst team in the nation, and obviously everybody knows about that, and that's 2 years ago, but he wasn't a good linebacker. He just wasn't. But obviously he was making the position switch. I know coming out of high school, he was more of a running back. So making that switch was, a change for him. Last year, before he got hurt, he showed good improvement. And there's some promise there. But then this literally came out of nowhere. You mentioned the 15 tackles and 2.5 tackles for loss. He had also 13 defensive stops, which is a defensive stop for us is limiting the offense to 40% of the line to gain on first downs, 50% on second downs, and then on third downs, obviously making a stop of short of the first down marker. So he had 13 of those, and last year in the games that he played, he had 10 all year. So he already surpassed his total from last year in just one game. What he did is really impressive, and as obviously shown by the grade and then how many tackles and stops that he had.
How much of everything opening up for Dineen was because of the defensive line playing in front of him?
I mean, he was just making plays. Sure, it helps that he has a really good defensive line in front of him to be able to make those plays, but he was beating blocks. He was making the right reads and pursuing on the right angles, and then obviously didn't miss a single tackle. So he was when he got to the ball carry, he made the tackle. And obviously, you can credit the defensive line, and they played really well. Both, Dorrance Armstrong, J.J. Holmes, Danny Wise, Josh Ahambi, but all those guys, they played really well in run defense. But Dineen was the guy making the plays, and he was also beating the blocks too. So it wasn't just those guys keeping him clean. He was making a lot of those things happen for himself.
How sustainable do you think this is for Joe Dineen? Like, not necessarily being the best-rated defender, linebacker every week, but just to be one of the better Big 12 guys.
It's very doable for him. You already mentioned, because of that defensive line, you're going to have offensive lines that are dedicating bodies to Daniel Wise, and if Joe Dineen coming off of his blocks, and if he's occupying a double team or what have you, he can do it. He's obviously shown the improvement year after year. If he can stay healthy and continue to make plays like that, I mean, I think it's sustainable. Obviously, not at a huge level like that, and obviously you're going to get an inferior opposition, but he has the chance to really shine this year.
We're talking with John Costco of Pro Football Focus here on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. More on the defensive line. I saw Dorrance Armstrong was on that all Pro Football Focus Big 12 first team this last week. Didn't put up any sack numbers or anything, but that might be the story of this year. Like, he might end up with less sack numbers than last year, but he might be a better player, might have more impact on the game because defenses are keen on him. How well did he grade out? How well did some of those other defensive linemen grade out for Kansas?
Yeah, Armstrong graded out really well. He had 2 hits and 2 hurries, which doesn't show up on a normal stat sheet, but we're charting all of that. So, even if it doesn't look like he affected the quarterback with his pass rush, he really did on, at least 4 occasions. He had other times where he beat the offensive tackle, but the ball was out too quickly, those types of things. So he graded out well, but he also graded out well in run defense, which is not something that he was very good at last year. Last year, I know, he was one of the better graded edge defenders in the Big 12, but he didn't make our first team Big 12 because of his run defense. He was fine, obviously a fine pass rusher, but where he struggled was in run defense. so far, at least this year, he's, and you know, this one game, he showed an improvement in that, being able to hold up on the edge and made a couple of plays. Daniel Wise, obviously, he was a guy that last year was our first team All Big 12, played really well. He was an underrated pass rusher. He only had, I think it was 3 sacks last year. Didn't obviously get a sack in this game, but what he's able to do is penetrate and cause that disruption and force it out to, you know, getting where Armstrong's getting cleanup sacks like that. So all those guys on the defensive line, even J.J. Holmes was really good in run defense. He had also a pressure and a batted pass. Those guys, they played really well, and they had – what's encouraging is that they were all really good in run defense. I know that these guys already can perform as pass rushers, because Wise has shown it, Armstrong's shown it, and then based on those two, what they can do will, you know, put everybody else really good around them. But what they needed to improve upon this year was their run defense, and so far they have shown that.
What about the secondary? How did they do in that first game?
There's some good and bad in the secondary. Mike Lee had a little bit struggled in the secondary, which was, I think, a little shock in terms of. Obviously the one guy that's coming back with experience, he was targeted 5 times, allowed 4 of those catches for 36 yards. But where he was good was Derek Neal played really well, and so did, I don't know how to, Shaquille Taylor. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his first name, but nice. So those guys played really well. Taylor, you know, he was targeted 5 times, only allowed 2 catches. He did allow a touchdown, but he also had a pass breakup. And then Neal, he allowed 3 catches for just 14 yards and had a pass defensive. So those guys, you know, he had some good and bad in there. You know, obviously giving up a touchdown, that's just gonna happen. But other than that one play, he had played well for Taylor.
We're talking with John Costco here, Pro Football Focus. I'm Derek Johnson, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Let's move over to the offensive side of the ball. Obviously, the big question coming into the game, who's the starting quarterback? Ends up being Peyton Bender, starts the entire game for Kansas. What were your first impressions of Bender out there for the Jayhawks?
I thought there was some good and bad. You know, he showed good command. He orchestrated the offense down the field, made some really nice throws, but he had some that you would like to have gotten back, you know, throwing deep. Deep right, he was really good. He had, you know, he was 2 of 3 for 64 yards. But going deep middle, he did struggle. He did have the one. He was 1 for 5 and did have a touchdown there. But throwing to the middle of the field was his weak spot. But when you look at it on the whole, he had some really nice deep balls, and he was able to get, you know, stretch the field, make the right reads, and basically distribute the ball pretty evenly across the entire field, which was a good thing to see. And then obviously when you throw up 364 yards and 4 touchdowns, those are obviously excellent numbers. Another area where he did struggle, though, was when he was pressured, which was only on 7 of his 39 dropbacks, he had a pass rating of 0.0. So, you know, it's only one game and it's only on 7 dropbacks where, you know, he had, you know, drop pass, which hurts his numbers there. So, you'd like to see a little bit more improvement, obviously, from under pressure and then throwing deep middle. But on a whole, I think it was a positive sign for the Jayhawks.
He's got plenty of targets to throw the ball to. Steven Sims, obviously, is the big name coming back. He had a big day. We've talked about other targets on this show, and a few of those stood out. Ben Johnson had a really good game. Chase Harrell made the highlight one-handed catch. What did you think of the guys catching the passes from Bender?
Obviously, Sims was the highlight of it, and he graded out extremely well. When you get 4 catches for 142 yards and 2 touchdowns, that's, you know, any day that's going to be good. Ben Johnson, like you said, he showed really well, except for just he had the one drop, which was a really nice pass by Bender there. But he had, you know, had a touchdown for, you know, on 3 catches and 90 yards, and his passer rating, you know, when Bender was targeting him, was 156.3. So that's a really, obviously really good there. Jeremiah Booker showed well. He did have, you know, was targeted 6 times, caught for 66 yards. And then guys like Shadler was showed well. So And Chase Harrell obviously was the catch. So the weapons around him looked pretty solid and obviously highlighted by Sims.
Are you worried at all about the lack of running game, or do you think they just had other priorities, or maybe it was just the defense putting too many in the box to where they didn't want to run against it? Are you worried at all, or do you think it's just let's wait and see what happens in week two?
I am worried. You know, they lose a guy in Keon Kinner who was able to make a lot of his own yards because the offensive line wasn't very good. And in this game, you had 24 carries rushes by the entire team and just one forced missed tackle. So that is a concern that, you know, against an FCS opponent, that they were only able to get, as a team, 81 yards rushing. So that is a concern. I was hoping and expecting that they would, you know, show their strength and their will on a lesser opponent and be able to run it down their throats, but they just, you know, they didn't. Part of that was, you know, they had a couple of the offensive linemen struggled in run blocking. Jason Rhodes struggled a little bit, and so did Chris Hughes. The positive signs for the offensive line was that Mesa Ribordi was strong in the run game, and so was the new right tackle, Antone Frazier. So some good and bad there in the offensive line, but what concerns me is that the running backs weren't able to make much more beyond what the offensive line gave them.
So does that concern you more then? I mean, does improvement need to come more from the backs or the offensive line?
It needs to come from obviously both. I think the offensive line did show improvement from last year. I didn't see it from the running back that they had improved or that they need to improve there, because, you know, you lose Keon Kinner, and then so you have, you know, Taylor Martin and Khalil Herbert come back, but they didn't show much, and obviously they didn't get as very many carries in terms of it was spread around there. So that might be the reason, is that, you know, Beatty was giving, you know, spreading out the wealth and trying to see what he had in his running backs. But that does concern me that none of the running backs really stepped up and showed a good game that they could have.
We're talking with John Costco, Pro Football Focus, here on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. So the big one this weekend, I mean, Coach Beatty said, most important game. He said it's because it's the next one, but a lot of people would peg this as such an important game, not only because they haven't been 2-0 since 2011, but also, I mean, if you want to be a team that wins 3-4 games, maybe challenges for a bowl game as a surprise team, you got to win this football game. How well does Kansas match up with Central Michigan?
I think they match up extremely well. You look at Central Michigan, they're losing their senior quarterback from last year in Cooper Rush, and then, so they brought in Shane Morris as their starting quarterback, and he really struggled last week against a Rhode Island team that I believe Kansas played Rhode Island first week last year and crushed them.
Yeah.
Right? So you got Central Michigan who struggled against the team. They barely squeaked it by just 3 points, so I think they match up extremely well. Both their quarterbacks that got into the game, you know, they substituted their backup quarterback, and he struggled as well. So when you have facing a team that has a struggling quarterback, and that bodes well, you know, for the team. Obviously, they on defensive side they were a lot better because they're going up against a lesser opponent, and they had a couple really good players come, you know, stand out. Their defensive tackle Chris Cantazavellas, and a linebacker, Malik Fountain. So those guys, on defensive side, they weren't really tested, I would say, but they're on their offense is where they struggled, and I think that's where, obviously, KU can win that game is with their strong defense.
All right, he's John Costco. Heard it right here, talking some KU football. John Costco of Pro Football Focus joining us on Rock Chalk Sports Talk, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Thanks so much for joining us today, John.
My pleasure, as always.
All right, you can check out all his work on profootballfocus.com. They're rating all the players. They're rating different teams, their performances, etc. And again, Joe Janine was the highest-rated player in college football for defensively week one. That's John Costco of Pro Football Focus. I'm Derek Johnson, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.